Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for August 18th, 2008, and on this episode, Ann Nicholson Weber interviews members of the Piven Theater. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
I'm Ann Nicholson Weber, and this is Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guests today are Joyce Piven, who is the Artistic Director Emeritus at Piven Theater Workshop, Jen Green, who is the Artistic Director there, and Susan Payne, who is a faculty member at the school. And we're talking about Piven, which is a wonderful training, acting training facility, both for children and for adults, and also has its own equity theater, does an amazing amount of outreach into the community, and is one of the pillars of the theater community here in the Chicagoland area. It's actually located in Evanston. So welcome, Joyce, Jen, and Susan. I thought we would start by talking about the philosophy of training actors that characterizes Piven. And Joyce, maybe you could start just by describing the kind of training you do and the philosophy that underlies that.
Okay, give it a stab. Well, for one thing, we're always mindful of the fact that we're exploring an art form and that it has a discipline. Mm-hmm. And foremost is the idea of play. And play is a very creative activity, especially when it's purposeful. So what we're trying to do is to open up the imagination of young people, the student, the player, and encourage them to risk and explore this art form in the context of a culturally supportive community. Mm-hmm. So that if they fall on their face, they fall on their face. It's not the end of the world, and nobody's judging them.
Mm-hmm. So it would allow a certain amount of risk-taking, a safe place.
Right, but foremost is the idea, in order to take a risk, you have to explore improvisation, mm-hmm. spontaneity, impulse. One of our students had an aha experience a while back, and she said, oh, I know, you're training the impulse, which is a little contradictory, but very apt kind of thing. They're exercising their impulses, their spontaneity, and their imaginations. And the philosophy in back of that is the focus we want them to have is not on their self, not on how am I doing, am I good, am I pretty, am I cute, will I succeed? No, not in any of that. It's more focusing on the task at hand, focusing on the other person. We have a lot of games where there's a give and take, so receiving and giving, and you're so busy doing that, you don't think of yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't think of being self-conscious. And this is right, because that's what play is. I'm also thinking of my husband, who was co-founder of this many, many years ago, and he always said, children are terrible actors. And we'd say, don't say that too much, Bern. You know, don't say it out loud. And he would say, but it's true. They're imitating adults. They have a kind of a notion from the movies or even the stage about how they should act. And he was very adamant about it. They're not natural actors. Mm-hmm. We think they are. But if they are in a framework that puts them in touch with their natural self, and that's part of our philosophy too, that uniqueness. If we put them in touch with that, they're very natural, and they have a voice that no adult can duplicate because it's their own. Yeah. But doesn't come easy.
Yeah, there's that kind of facile child actor that one pat, and that can be very valued commercially because those kids are dependable. They'll give pretty much the same performance every time.
That's right.
They're not going to screw up. But I can imagine that kind of child actor is less likely to mature into a real actor as an adult.
Yes, that's why so many child actors don't grow up to be. Look at Shirley Temple.
Right.
She was a phenom, and she's a classical example.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think she was spontaneous as a child,
mm-hmm.
but having to produce all the time as she evolved as a person, she didn't know how to carry that on,
mm-hmm.
and nobody could help her.
Mm-hmm. Well, Susan, maybe you could give a description of what actually happens in your classroom at Piven, give a little flavor, and try maybe to, maybe you can't do this because you've grown up in Piven, as you told me before the interview started, but contrast it perhaps to other techniques or schools of thought about acting that you've encountered.
Absolutely. When we start with children in the classes, we really, like Joyce said, because it is an artistic form, there is a very set progression of games that we like to follow. And although it is to get to play, we think about it very seriously. We think about our play very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And finding those progressions of games and exercises that have been developed over years at the workshop that will help children at every age level, because we teach starting at fourth grade and go all the way through high school, what games and what sequences of games are going to help unlock not only that particular age, but as we look at each individual makeup of the class, what is this group of children doing and what games are going to serve them best in their play in order to help them unlock that spontaneity. Or so, for instance, really that's there is a progression of games that we generally follow, but then we get together in teachers' meetings to hone that for each particular class.
Hmm.
And I forgot the second half of your question.
Well, maybe contrast the philosophy or the technique to others that you've encountered.
Well, right. We in other even middle school training kinds of programs where they're dealing with children, they're giving them text and they're being very heavy-handed, and it's really hard. Children become much more self-conscious and even less natural than they would be in other contexts with text or other contexts with play. So we work very physically and at first and very much about impulse and group dynamic, mm-hmm. and making contact and building community, and then introduce folk tales and text. And Piven, what I love about the materials that we choose for children is that we love to work with these universal folk tales that touch on themes that are so deeply a part of like the middle school experience or the high school experience that they don't get to play with in the same kind of way with a staid text. And so they get to discover the text and bring to the text their experience. And for me as a child growing up in the work, that was what was so exciting, mm-hmm. to take a folk tale and to really feel like I was accessing something about myself in a unique way and being allowed to express that in my own words and also with the written text. But there is this improvisational element where kids are bringing their true selves to the theatrical process, which for me was so exciting I stayed around 20 years. Yeah.
Well, that touches on some of the antecedents, as I understand it, of Piven, which include Paul Sills' story theater method. Maybe one of you could just describe that method and then how Piven's technique relates to that.
Viola Spolin was a genius, and she claimed that she was visited. She would never answer any question that we had about her method because she said it just was an epiphany, and I believe it because somehow she was able to touch upon the principles of improvisation and acting within a game context, And she took these children's games and turned them into theater games. Mm-hmm. For example, you could take the game of tag, and you could, just by changing the rhythm, slow motion, double time, shoelaces tied together, you automatically moved it into the realm of theater, fantasy. We don't play tag usually in slow motion.
Right.
So it was another way of thinking. And most of all, she had a sense of community, and that was all her training. She was with the Hull House and was a social activist. And so everything related to community. Another game we have, which is classic, is parts of a whole or a machine, where each person contributes sound or movement in relation to the other. And they work together to wind down together, breathe, start up in double time, and freeze together without anyone calling it eventually. And there you have an instant community, parts of a whole. And so she was instrumental. And then I actually worked with Viola when I was doing repertory. We were doing, I don't know, The Seagull or something. And Paul, her son, brought her in, and we played games. And we were very afraid of her. And not, you know, I don't know quite why. Improvisation was strange and new at that time. Mm-hmm. It was quite a while ago. Mm-hmm. At any rate, her son became her biggest translator and advocate and creative on his own. And at some point, without going into my whole history, you know, if you live long enough, you have history. But Paul and I and a few others, Bernie Beck, actually, who is with us now, and two or three other people, we started story theater. He created that form, mm-hmm. Which he eventually took to Broadway after going through several companies. And it was much appreciated in New York. But anyway, he was the founder of what we know as story theater, and that's allowed us to incorporate, as Susan said, folk tales, myths. We even do literary stuff. We've done Flannery O'Connor, for God's sake. We have a way of developing a relationship to literature that just profits all of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe, Jen, you could talk. I noticed on the website that Piven is very careful not to put all of your celebrity graduates forward as if that was what you were aiming for. But on the other hand, it is true that you have spawned a number of very well-known actors and some playwrights and directors. I'd be interested to know if you can talk about if there's anything that characterizes, well, first of all, maybe you name some of them, and then what might characterize them as artists that you attribute to their training at Piven.
I mean, I think some of our more famous alums would be John Cusack, Joan Cusack, Aidan Quinn, Lily Taylor, and of course, Jeremy Piven.
Joyce's son.
And I mean, certainly in terms of playwrights, Sarah Rule, an incredible playwright. And I think what characterizes, I think, all of these people, but it's the same thing that characterizes any of our students, is their ability to respect their own authenticity and their ability to respect their own individual voices. And what's special about that, in combination with sort of the wider philosophy of the training, is you're also taught incredible collaborative skills that respect you as an individual, but allows all of the individuals to come to the table and to work together in this incredible way. Mm-hmm. And And that's why I think we have people like Susan and like so many people of our faculty coming back, because they've received something really incredible that they're wanting to share and to sort of give back. And it's the principle of give and take. And every member of our faculty has trained with us. And I think that's what makes our workshop so special, because everyone has this common language. What it's not is eclectic or starting at ground zero. Mm-hmm. Everyone has experienced this incredible sense of mentorship as a student. And then that continues with our teacher training. That continues with studying within our adult program as well. And just continues to stick to the principle of reinforce, respect yourself, respect your voice, respect that you have something to say. And a lot of us forget that, you know, and where's this place where we can be encouraged to offer opinion and to listen, which is something we haven't quite touched on yet. But the ability to listen is really prized at Piven, and to understand the quality of listening you offer to other people, the quality of listening you receive is often what allows you to speak.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about your emphasis on the individual voice, which I definitely recognize is essential to any artist. But there's another side of acting, which is transformation and service of the text. So how do you balance those two impulses, those two aspects of acting? Maybe Susan?
Well, I feel like once they have the tools to explore text, that you don't just leave them high and dry and then throw a text at them. You would really try and find ways in which to, you know, like a ballet dancer would work on the same set of steps endlessly to perfect it. You know, we'll work on a very minuscule folktale or an Aesop's fable, and we will play with it and play with it and play with it so that we can keep those principles of transformation and spontaneity and inventiveness in the text, while also respecting that, yes, it is an art form where you do need to memorize text. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, we come with these performances that the students are able to present at the end are, you know, literary tales verbatim or folk tales verbatim, but infused with a naturalness in the speaking and a naturalness in the presentation and an authenticity in the emotional values of the text that we could never have gotten unless we'd gone through the play to get there, to arrive. And that's what I think is so fun, is to watch them really inhabit text with their own voices and not like an actor voice or what they think they should be, how they should be saying it. It's really coming from a discussion of the text. Like, we'll sit down with middle schoolers and we'll say, well, what is Hansel and Gretel about to you guys? Like, it's not just about these peasants with bonnets or, you know, and get them talking a little bit about how they hook into that text. And working that way, by the time it's presented, it's invested with so much of them. It's really wonderful. Mm-hmm. But it's also the strict discipline of memorization, too.
Right. Did you have more to add to that, Jen?
Yeah, I mean, transformation is such an essential part of what we teach as well, but I think it's transforming from reality to reality versus schlock to schlock, you know, if that makes sense, you know?
And, absolutely.
And reality comes from who you are in this moment and layering on the imaginary circumstances versus I'm going to act at something. So many people, I think, and kids especially, just can't tell the difference between good acting and bad acting, and they'll all want to do bad acting at all costs because there's a reward to it in some ways, because you can get a cheap laugh, you can maybe allow yourself to just sort of be egocentric and you don't care what anyone else is doing. You can sort of be in the center of your own world for a second.
What we would call hammy acting.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Uh-huh. And I feel myself being so, you know, being so diplomatic about saying these things, you know, because when you're in the classroom with kids, it's finding as many different ways that you can to offer kids an alternative. And often just leading kids away from bad acting is just asking them a question, you know, like, what do you think about this? Because then you go back to a voice that's connected to a thought. And a lot of times what kids want to do, and what I think a lot of other programs sort of do, is make acting separated from thought, separated from a process, and it's about memorizing and blocking and a line reading versus understanding a sense of language and movement and melody that you as a performer own that nobody else can take away from you. And so many kids come to us with, I think, some bad habits because I've been, you know, I've been told to just talk loud and fast, or where should I move, or what should I do with my hands?
Do you find that there are kids who resist this because they've had some other, I mean, just to back up, I know that there are kids who come a long way to take classes at Piven, in the interest of full disclosure, my son is at Piven. It's down the road for us, but I know that he has classmates who come from the far western suburbs even, or the southern suburbs. So there's a reputation bringing people, kids who are serious about acting, and I'm hearing you say that a lot of them come with some bad training behind them and some habits you need to break. What I'm interested in now is, do they then resist this, what you have to offer them? And anybody can take that?
Well, they might resist initially, or if it really, if they really married to another kind of working, they could reject it. But actually, I think it's so involving. Mm-hmm. Concretely, we're into exploring the story, and a lot of times when we do a story, we improvise enough to create our own story and then script it. Mm-hmm. If we're doing a story about a fool, it's not removed. How do we treat people who are different? Do we call them fools? Are they rejected? What's the relevance to us? Are fools the odd men out? Are fools the clowns? Who are they? And what's their relationship to me? And so in exploring that and improvising, we get something that's more authentic.
I guess I was imagining, though, that someone, some 12-year-old fairly experienced actor coming to you might find that what he or she knows how to do gets taken apart, and he or she feels kind of lost now, knew how to act and now doesn't, and if they're ambitious to be performing, may find themselves in a pickle.
Yeah, I think that what's so interesting and what I love about the method is that that feedback that they're getting is happening so subtly that it's not something I feel like people have almost even a chance to resist in a formal mm-hmm. way. That the calls are, you know, train overhead or full body whisper or double time or slow motion. And so you're able to address directly the fact that the bad habits are there without calling them out in a shaming way or, you know, disrespecting where they're coming from, so that I feel like the changes can happen. There are kids who are resistant, but if they go with the call, which is a pretty direct, it's not like you're saying you're being phony or mm-hmm. you're overblown or stop making dramatic pauses. You're just saying train overhead, or you're just saying, you know, double time. And they can relate to that, you know, and sort of to spite themselves. And I have seen kids who are resistant the first day, but the second you start giving them energetic calls and kids are going with it, they're sort of in it in
you
a way.
Stop worrying about.
Yeah, right. It's very hard. I'm thinking in my, you know, it's very hard to actually, for me to recall many resistant students that, I mean, I would see resistance the first day that don't just sort of by the nature of the methodology just enter in mm-hmm. within the first couple mm-hmm. classes.
Mm-hmm. Well, something else you've talked about is how is the continuity and how every faculty member has gone through Piven. Is there a danger of insularity there, that you don't bring in new and different approaches?
I think it's interesting because the principles of the process that we teach are the same principles that we hold to ourselves as teachers. So it's sensing that as our instructors come back to us, they bring something very new to the table. And how can we, in respecting these basic principles of what the workshop teaches, how can we begin to integrate these new ideas and these new voices?
Because they've been out in the world before they come back to teach.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So someone like Susan, I think, is a really incredible example because she brings to us all of her opera training, so that she's able to really bring in a totally new voice, a totally new kind of way of working, but it's combining what she knows about her own specialty as an artist with the work that we do. Mm-hmm. And we see that in different kinds of areas, because we'll see members who decide to maybe go more into casting. Maybe that's something they share with us. Maybe mm-hmm. It's staff members who are interested in mask or in puppetry. How can they bring that to us? Or commedia. Mm-hmm. And we're able to sort of find these new kinds of tools. But it's all within these same basics.
Yeah.
You know, these same principles. Mm-hmm. And certainly we'll see teachers bring back games to the workshop that slowly becomes part of the canon.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you'll see that happen, because that will just be a new way to make sense of this idea. Mm-hmm. But it will be something that's still within the idea of play, spontaneity, collaborative voices, individuality, listening, agreement, ensemble. And if it sort of fits that criteria and offers a new avenue in, let's bring it in. Let's bring it in. But what we don't do, on the other hand, is, even though there's incredible teachers in the Chicago area, what we don't do is just hire incredible teachers, because then what we might have is something that's more like a survey of forms, which is valuable in its own way. But we're committed to this commonality. We're committed to this common voice.
And I can imagine, particularly for children, to just learn one technique thoroughly and consistently becomes a base for exploring others. I can imagine for adults, it would make more sense, perhaps, to try different things, but you need to have that foundation.
And you find what I think makes sense to you. Mm-hmm. Because I had studied, I came to Piven not as a kid. I'm sort of one of the rare folks who came to the faculty from our adult wing. Mm-hmm. And I had gone to a performing arts high school, and I had studied various different kinds of acting technique in college. But literally, when I walked into Piven, I had an experience that a lot of people have, where I went, oh, this is my house. This is my home.
Just resonated. This was for you.
That's what's cool. I mean, the adult program is really cool, because you get folks from all different walks of life, and folks who aren't used to playing. You know, it's great to see the lawyers play. It's great to see the marketing folks. It's great to see, right, you know, people who answer phones for a living, you know, suddenly play. You know, some people do yoga, some people, you know, study Pilates, some people do a sport, but wow, this is a creative spiritual workout. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. And I felt that as soon as I walked in, and I was like, oh, I'm going to hang out, you know. And luckily, through Piven's very generous scholarship program, I got to hang out.
Uh-huh.
You know, I got to hang out. And it's a testament, I think, to Piven as well, that we take our scholarship so seriously that a scholarship student can become our artistic director.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking more about the emphasis on play and putting that in the context of a mediatized childhood. And I'm interested, Joyce, in whether you've seen a change in the kids coming into the school over the last decades, as more and more children have grown up with, in my humble view, way too much television, computer, and so forth. Is that visible to you?
Yeah, really, a real evolution. In the beginning, the first thing a student would ask is, what play are we doing, and when am I going to be on the stage? And then the students started to be silent about that coming in, and they would, and then that kind of puzzled us. I thought, gee, well, theater games must be in the air, and the language must be familiar. Why they don't ask that anymore? And so we started looking at them closely, and what happened was we saw that they were hungry for play, literally hungry, so that just coming in and playing tag was an event for them.
Uh-huh.
you know, a real event. It was nurturing. It was really important. And but then there were, you know, that's the good, the plus. Hard to reclaim our childhood stories. It's hard. It's challenging when they've seen celebrities and all kinds of musical comedy versions and cartoons based on Cinderella and Hansel and Gretel and all of that. So getting down to basics is a challenge, but they can go there.
They can do that.
So that's the big change. But I know this will sound very self-serving, but what we see happening is that not only are youngsters hungry for play, they're hungry to express themselves in this very confusing world. Mm. And they need to have a voice in that. And I always like to say very facetiously that the cure to all of our world ills, preventing war and preventing poverty, everything, is this method. And I also have to say that so far nobody in the White House has asked me, and I don't think they'd be much interested. But I really think, I think art can cure the world. It just takes time.
I think we have to end on that. Thank you very much.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of August 18th, 2008. Eclipse Theatre Company has announced that their 2009 season will include four full productions, celebrating their past 10 years of one playwright per season. Eclipse's Celebration Series Part 2 will showcase their past featured playwrights and will once again present the entire season at the Greenhouse Theatre Center. The season begins with Rebecca Gilman's Blue Surge opening up on March 19th. Next is Pearl Klege's Midwest premiere of A Song for Coretta that starts on June 4th. Then, John Guare's 6 Degrees of Separation opens on July 23rd, and finally, Romulus Linney's Democracy starts on November 12th. Eclipse Theater is currently presenting the work of writer Neil Simon with the Jeff-recommended Plaza Suite that will be running through this August 31st at the Greenhouse. For more information about the season, please visit eclipsetheater.com. Mary Archie Theatre Company is preparing to celebrate the anniversary of 1969's Woodstock Music Fair with the 20th annual Abbie Hoffman Died for Our Sins Festival. The festival was inspired by the need to do something to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Woodstock. This year's event involves many of the mainstays of the past festivals by bringing many performers together for 3 days of non-stop theatrical entertainment. The festivities begin at 2 o'clock on Friday, August 22nd, when all will gather at the Daly Center and then embark on a peaceful march back to Angel Island, Mary Archie's home. For a complete list of the performing artists and for more information on the festival, please visit maryarchie.com, and that's Archie with two R's. The Tribune is reporting that when Steppenwolf Theatre's August Osage County opens at London's National Theatre in November, Ron D. Reed will indeed be in the show. This means that she will not be able to stay in the role of Madame Morrible in Wicked at the Oriental. Instead, Barbara Robertson will take over for Reed in Wicked, just like she did while the AOC was on Broadway. But this apparently means that Robertson may have to leave her title role of Mame before the end of the run at the Drury Lane Oakbrook. But no worries for the Tony Award-winning Rondi Reed. She will be returning to Wicked in January for the last performances before the grand closing. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago. And I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Joyce Piven, Jen Green, and Susan Payne for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson-Weber and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.